I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there. Be it on the right or the left, Republican, Democrat, young, old, black, white, Hispanic, it doesn't matter. If you're willing to think for yourself, then I've got something for you during my time on the air every day. Stephen Utroska had filled in for me last Thursday and Friday, did a great job. I spoke to him again yesterday. I'm going to have him in for a debate at some point. He's a busy guy, but as the legislative session ends and his work with the Freedom Caucus slows down a bit, I'm going to have him come in. He made a comment during the show that was accurate. I'm not upset by it, but he drew a distinction between himself and myself where he said that, you know, I'm down on the Republican Party, but he is a Republican and he believes that the Republican Party can be salvaged, that it can be reclaimed for liberty and freedom lovers, small, limited government people. I question that. I'm going to bring Stephen in maybe next week, week after. The issue, as he said, I'm really busy, but I'd like to come in and talk about that. I said, don't worry, the issue's not going anywhere anytime soon. So can the Republican Party be saved and rehabilitated, or is it time for just new parties across the board? I am one of these people who believe that maybe 8 or 10 political parties, everybody can choose their little thing, and we can just tie up every legislative body in knots, making it impossible for them to do anything because they cannot build a consensus across large groups of diverse parties. Is probably gridlock is what I cheer for. If there's a gridlock party, I think I'd vote for that. Anything to stop governments at just about every level from doing anything. They can undo things, but they can't do anything else. So anyway, we'll have Stephen in to kind of debate the issue, discuss the issue. I'm not mad at him for it. It certainly is a logic. I'd like to think that the Republican Party could be rehabbed. I'll be honest with you. I wish the Democratic Party could be rehabbed. I think it would be beautiful to see the Democratic Party become the Democratic Party of the 1980s, for instance, just as a start, not the farce, not the comedic. Well, it's a tragedy, not a comedy. It's a tragedy of what has become of the Democratic Party. They had some bad ideas before, and they've taken those that really expounded on them. So anyway, we'll have that show coming up. There was a kind of along that vein I ran across this morning. Has anybody seen the new Heineken ad? It is a long ad. It's about 4 minutes long. I guess it's more of a video, really, than it is just an advertisement. I don't know if they'll run it anywhere, but if you get a chance to see it, I don't even know what the title is. I don't have it pulled up. It certainly does not make for good audio, but I think it's interesting and thought-provoking. Essentially, what it is it brings two people in from very different political viewpoints, and they speak to the camera before they meet together. It'd be one somebody that's very conservative, another person that's very liberal, one person, you know, opposes transgender, the other person is big into climate change, but they don't talk about those things when they come in. They're given some instructions and they have to work together to put together a bar. And so while they're building these things, they're really just discussing how to work together to build this bar. At the end of it, they sit down and, well, they're shown the videos of each other before they started building the thing, where you have the conservative saying conservative things, the liberal saying liberal things, and they're given the choice to either walk out of the room and not interact with anybody or sit down over a beer and have a conversation. I think it's kind of interesting because I am kind of a bit of a, I'd probably be accused of being a kumbaya person here. It's just that I see the fighting among normies out here. All of us little people out here is really quite silly while they are backing up the truck at the upper levels and taking everything away from all of us. But I'm not of any illusion that suddenly the left is going to lose its craziness and that the right is going to become any more tolerant. And I'll explain that in just a second, because I read comments about this story. It was on a right-wing website. And this video was, a couple of people kind of accepted it, but it was pretty widely ridiculed and dismissed. And it's interesting to me that people on the right can see the intolerance of the left and call it out. I mean, it's become so apparent. You know, if you say anything that's even remotely considered offensive, the calls for cancellation and firings and depersonhood and everything come from the left immediately, yet many of the people on the right that notice these things and call them out are rigidly intolerant themselves. A couple of comments that were underneath this Heineken ad said, "I will never compromise to even the tiniest degree with any ideological leftist. Not on any point whatsoever. There is no middle ground anymore." And I would imagine a lot of people listening to me would probably say the same thing, because you focus heavily on some of the more crazy things that the left is about right now. But I'll tell you, you know, I'm somebody who realizes the left has been right. They have in the past, anyway. They've been right. They've lost most of their right parts, but wasn't the left right about anti-war? And some people on the left still are anti-war. Of course, the Democratic Party and the corporate media has convinced most Democrats, most people on the left, to now be bloodthirsty warmongers, the same way that Fox News taught people on the right to be. But they used to be anti-war. A lot of people on the left are anti-drug war. I believe that they are on the correct side of that. Left used to oppose any restrictions on free speech. Of course, they've lost that. And they used to be very good on civil liberties, and they've lost that as well. So the left at least has a kernel where they were possibly righter on some things than the right themselves. The right is also correct on some things with small limited government, pro-life, and these kinds of things, but it's pro-life only if it's an American baby, and it's only small limited government if the other side's in charge. It's just interesting to me. As I say, I'm an observer of all this. If you get a chance to see the Heineken ad, check it out. I'll try to find the title maybe during the break, and I'll tell you what it is. You can look at it. I'll be interested to hear anybody's opinion on it. You can either call in tomorrow or send me an email. You can always reach me at mikemadison@wyab.com. I was going to play this one clip real quick, too. I'll throw it in here, and then we're going to get into something a little bit different today. I've got a clip actually from the movie The Big Short. Kind of dovetails onto my show yesterday, but I wanted to play this. You know, you want to talk about all of us little people out here arguing amongst ourselves, and particularly you people on the left who are carrying water for the Democratic Party of all people while they convince you that you need to go with less, you need to paying more for a gallon of gasoline is your patriotic duty to stand with Ukraine. Am I supposed to say hashtag in front of that? The left constantly hoodwinked into going into all kinds of self-harming behavior because their political class tells them so. And this Madison Cawthorn guy, he's a Republican congressman. I think he's only been there for about 14 months, so he's a freshman congressman. He is the guy that made news last week. We talked about it here, where he said he's been invited to many sex parties, and he has witnessed members of Congress who do little bumps of cocaine while they're standing there talking to him. Now, I brought up at the time, you know, there's a lot of people who see things like orgies and sexual perversion and things like that, and you immediately knee-jerk say, oh, it's the Democrats, it's a, you know, Sniffin' Joe and Hunter Biden and all of his issues. I will refer you back to Conspiracy of Silence, the thing that was written about the Republicans back in the 1990s, the Republicans, as a documentary, they actually had it killed before it aired, but you can find copies of it. And then I would also assume that this Madison Cawthorn is a Republican congressman. I doubt he's hanging out with a bunch of Democratic congressmen who are doing cocaine and offering for him to go to sex parties. I would just imagine that a lot of these are Republican-sponsored drug and sex events. Anyway, Madison Cawthorn made some news with that. He's also, he's getting kind of loose-lipped. I've had several clips on over the years of some of these people who go into Congress and are kind of a little startled by what they've seen. Ken Buck was one of those people. Justin Amash talked about how if he didn't toe the party line of the Republican Party, even if he was on the right side of an issue, if he didn't do what leadership said, he found himself from the second-ranking member of a committee to the 19th ranking. Nothing he had done had changed. He just didn't carry water on some other vote for Mitch McConnell or Kevin McCarthy, and suddenly he's demoted, even though he was a very constitutionally-minded guy. But Madison Cawthorn here making some more headlines, talking about what goes on when it comes to stock purchases by members of Congress.
And so we all kind of monitor that just to see what's going on. And I noticed a lot of people in the majority party were buying stocks that had to do with some kind of battery, some kind of technology for electric vehicles. And then wouldn't you know it, about a month or two later, it was then announced, right, 700,000 electric vehicles to the fleet, and then all those stock prices just jump, whether you're investing in lithium mines, whether you're investing in the people who actually manufacture batteries, whether you're investing in directly into companies that make electric cars. And so that's a way people can make money, is through this kind of version of insider trading that people can do. But we are limited on our ability to have any kind of earned income. You can have passive income, but you can't have any earned income. And so you can't sit on a board and get a salary for it or anything like that. But what you can do is you can have your spouse put as chairman of this company. You can have your spouse saying that she's going to be, or he or she is going to be a consultant to this firm. And next thing you know, they're getting a paycheck for really not doing anything.
Could your son?
Your son? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that's obviously a reference to Hunter Biden and what he's doing. I pointed out with every one of these stories, this is equal opportunity corruption up there. Republicans doing the same things, even old Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I like some of the stuff that she does up in Congress. She's a hellraiser, there's no doubt about it, but she was seen to be trading, I think it was Raytheon stock, not that long ago, before the Russian invasion or before we started off latest hostility. So this is the scam that's being run on all of us. It's really, really... It's very sick stuff. This is why I say our anger should be pointed up, not out. I'll be right back. Salvation. Radio is cleaning up the nation. They say you better listen to the right side of reason. But they don't give you any choice because they think that it's treason. Well, I'm not breaking any news to let you know we're in the middle of another storm. Delayed some school openings, and I think some schools announced shutting down yesterday. Don't get me started. We are raising such a neurotic generation of kids, and I'm just going to say it again. Parents, when you teach your kids that this is normal to just miss things on a weather report, now if there's an ice storm, if it is blinding rain, kids who drive or anybody needs to just pull over and wait the 5 to 10 minutes it might take to be able to see again. It's okay to be late somewhere during rain, but the idea of looking at a weather report and deciding that, well, tomorrow's off. Yeah, I looked at the news. Thunderstorms coming through. Clear my day tomorrow. I can't live tomorrow. It'll be safe the next day. This idea of eternal safety is driving me insane. But anyway, it is raining, and how about that as a segue into this? If you go out and you find out you got a bunch of standing water out there, the solution has always been the thought of a French drain, but there's something new on the horizon now, and I want to bring your attention to HydroBlox by Magnolia Drainage Solutions. This is an alternative to old French drains, and it is, on average, about 60% less expensive. It moves about 38 gallons of water per minute. It can move water from where you don't want it to where you do. And you certainly are going to look outside today, particularly in that backyard, and you're going to see where you got water that you don't want. If you got a dog, it's nothing worse than just pooling water. Stays muddy for days and days. This comes inside. It's a whole thing. So get your drainage straight there. This HydroBlox stuff's high compression strength material that never deteriorates, settles, or clogs. So if you want that installed or you want to order the system, make sure you call Magnolia Drainage Solutions. You can reach them at MagnoliaDrainageSolutions.com, MagnoliaDrainageSolutions.com. I was going to get into this today. You know, yesterday I spent a lot of time really kind of, I don't want to call myself panicking, but concerned I did a whole show yesterday pretty much about central bank digital currencies and the way that they're kind of corralling us into this idea, and with some executive orders that have come out, with the direction things are going, we are could be months away from them trying to roll this stuff out. Now, I have no idea how quickly they'll do these things, but you understand that, you know, my guard is down a little bit, or I guess my guard is up. Yeah, I used that wrong. My guard is up. Had you asked me in March or April of 2020, you think there's any chance that your own federal government would come in and force you to wear a mask, would force its citizens to participate in a medical experiment, would force business owners to close their business, would force people to not go exercise in a park? I would have said, not in America. Oh, they might try that, but the American people would never put up with it. That was a long, long 2 years ago. Now I realize what they've done is they've kind of tested the waters. They stuck their toe in the waters of what Americans will put up with and went, oh, look at that. It's just fine. We can do whatever we want to. So we talked yesterday about this central bank digital currency. I said yesterday, I hope I come across as some kind of a crazy person that was way ahead and concerned about nothing. There's many, many topics that I really hope I'm wrong on. I'm not invested in my ego to say I was right. I'm going to tell you something. I have one prediction that did come true. We're going to talk about it in the show today, but it was my easiest one ever, so I don't really take a lot of credit for it. But my ego's not wrapped up into being right. It's just into explaining to you what I think we need to be on guard to. And I hope that yesterday was an unhinged ranting of a conspiracy theorist that never comes true. But I do see the fragility, the vulnerability we have in the financial system right now. And I just happened to run across a clip from the movie The Big Short. And man, when I look at it, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen, because what it was a bunch of people who see the truth, who see through the fraud and the deception, who see the reality of a situation, and they, much braver than I am, they put their money where their mouth is. With firm conviction, there were a lot of people that made a lot of money in the economic collapse of 2008. And these are the guys who were betting against the housing market because they knew it was a fraud. They knew the bonds around the housing market was a fraud. They understood that the housing market, prompted by low interest rates, the same way our stock market, bond market, and housing market right now is propped up by manipulated low interest rates, they knew that the party could not continue, and they bet big on it. If you've not seen The Big Short, I highly recommend this movie. They do a great job, even a very clever way. I think they even use a supermodel in a bubble bath with a glass of champagne to explain some complex financial theories and concepts to people who watch this, because what happened in 2008 was complex. The mortgage market, the CDOs, the collateralized debt obligation market. These things are complex things that Americans don't really understand. They do a great job of explaining it, but it takes you through the housing crisis, the corruption of the regulatory agencies, the corruption of the bond rating agencies that were complicit in what went on. I find myself now talking about it. I'm so fascinated by it, and so many Americans need to understand what happened in 2008 that I want to talk about for the next 2 hours, but I won't. But definitely see The Big Short. You'll probably learn a lot. And it's a fascinating movie with, you know, big name actors. This is one of the hot ones. I get Gosling and Ryan. There's like a couple of Ryans, aren't there? There's some of these pretty boy guys. There's a couple of those in there. Steve Carell. And what the clip you're about to hear is Steve Carell's character, Mark Baum. But what's interesting about this clip to me is this is a meeting that apparently really took place, where you really have a situation very similar to what we have today. A lot of people are looking at this inflation and saying, this is bad. This is a game changer. And you've got CNBC, all of the financial media, Bloomberg, you've got the Biden administration, you've got the government telling you, oh, it's okay, it's transitory, job creation is through the roof, everything's going great, the economy is recovering, and you've got people that I associate with, people like me, saying, no, none of this is normal. None of this is right. None of this can sustain itself. And this was happening back in 2008. So I'm going to play this scene from the movie. It may be a bit of a reach to do in an audio format, but I did a little cutting and splicing of the audio to make it more appealing. But what this is a guy that's coming in and looking at what was happening in 2008. He had put a lot of money into he was going to benefit when the housing market collapsed, not because he wanted it to, not because he wanted to hurt people, but because he knew what was going on was fraud. He knew it was criminal behavior and it could not sustain itself. That's where we are today. And so he bet big on it and he maintained this position even when it got painful, even when the market moved against him and it looked like he was set to lose massive amounts of money. He steeled himself and said, no, I'm right about this. This is fraud. It will not make it. It will not work. And this is this character, Mark Baum, is going up against one of the big bulls, one of these people, the CNBC, Market Watch, financial media people who tell you, no, everything's great. If the stock market goes down, buy the dips. It's a chance to get stocks on sale. Most of your financial advisors are these people who refuse to see the writing on the wall. Anyway, I think this is pretty interesting because I believe this is repeating itself right now.
As the housing markets and banks continued to hemorrhage, only one of the big shorts refused to sell, Mark Baum. So it was beyond perfect when he was asked to speak at a conference opposite Bruce Miller, a famous bullish investor. After he and Mark had their debate, Alan Greenspan, one of the architects of the whole crisis, was scheduled to speak. Everyone in Mark's office showed up, even invited friends. This was the Ali versus Foreman of the financial world, the realists versus the fools. And if it seems almost too perfect, trust me, this happened.
Welcome, everyone. Please give a generous welcome to Mr. Bruce Miller and Mark Baum.
Strap yourself in.
So as some of you may know, Bear Stearns has just received a loan from J.P. Morgan. Of course, we're going to have to wait and see how the markets react, but that should lay to rest any concerns about the bank's health.
No, I take it you have no plans to sell your $200 million in Bear stock?
No, as a matter of fact, when we're done here, I'll probably go out and buy some more.
For the opposing view, Mr. Baum.
And when you hear these little buzzes and beeps in this, again, I know I'm making a bit of a leap to take a scene from a movie and play it as an audio, but this is everybody in this audience coming to see these two heavyweights in finance basically have a debate, and they're getting alerts on their phone. This is at the very infancy, the very beginning of the financial crisis as the wheels were starting to come off. And if you followed, Bear Stearns was one of the biggest investment banks along with Lehman Brothers in the world. I don't know how old Bear Stearns was. I think Lehman Brothers was something like 150 years old. And the financial wizards out there, the titans of the universe, the Federal Reserve, Death Star people said, oh, these kinds of, they'll never fail. We're America. Everything will be fantastic. Housing never goes down around the country. And so what's happening is this is the very beginning of the financial crisis. The market is starting to show some real signs of problems. And while these people are speaking, while this bull, meaning someone who thinks the market's going to go up, is debating this bear, who is the Mark Braun character, who says things are about to get bad, really bad, while they're debating, stock alerts are going off on these people's phones and they're seeing that these stocks are starting to melt down. I don't know if you remember this, and I'm an economics nerd, so I was fascinated as I watched the Dow, watched these financial stocks crumble and go into insolvency. And I want you to remember this too. The financial crisis really got going over the course of a weekend. There were a couple of warning signs. Over the course of a couple of weeks, there was some concern here or there, but the titans of the universe, the financial masters came out and told you they had everything under control. But during the course of a weekend, there were emergency meetings at the White House level. Of course, George W. Bush's Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson, formerly from anyone? Goldman Sachs. They met over the weekend, sometimes till, you know, late, early in the morning hours, trying to figure out how to put together a bailout package that the American people wouldn't just completely puke over in order to bail these banks out. It happened in a matter of days. The saying is, slowly at first, then suddenly. And this is what happened. So the bells and whistles you hear during this are people's phones going off because this is the very beginning of the financial crisis. But it is Mark Baum's speech that he's about to give. You just heard the guy say, oh, Bear Stearns is doing great. He reminds me a lot of Jim Cramer. Jim Cramer, the great stock analyst that's on CNBC that always tells you to buy stocks, that always tells you that Pfizer is a great company, that always tells you you got to have your money in Wall Street. And he was spectacularly wrong, particularly heading into the great financial crisis. So you've got the bull who's already come in and said, oh, Bear Stearns is fine. We got a loan. I'd be buying stock right now. And then this Mark Baum character comes on to, as the Mike Madison show says, and I think I'm sometimes guilty, I've become the turd in the punch bowl. Nope, I'm stalled out here. All right, I'm gonna reboot this clip. Sometimes when I pause these things, they kind of freeze. I'm gonna do this when we come back. See if we can get this thing kicked off. It's the frustration in this guy's voice of looking at the landscape of what's going on in the financial world, just looking at it and saying, this isn't right. This shouldn't be like this. People should understand what's going on. This is going to be a disaster. Ultimately, it becomes a disaster. And as he says, it's the little people who end up suffering for these things. This is the moment that I feel this way right now. I look across the landscape and say, this is not right. People need to understand what's going on. Stop facilitating it. Stop allowing it. And stop letting them get away with telling you that everything is okay and that everything is normal. It's not normal. We'll come back and listen to Mark Baum's part of this speech. Stay with me. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking about this financial stuff, and I'm going to tell you why. I think it's important. I've been sitting in this chair for 5 years, and during those 5 years, I was warning everybody about the inflation that would come, not because I'm a genius, but because I read geniuses. I've got some concepts. I've got some basic understanding of economic principles that are real, not the kind they try to tell you. Or it's almost like COVID. They try to tell you, oh, it's new science now. You ever notice this? Before every crisis, they tell you, this time is different. During the dot-com thing, stocks were going to the moon, and everyone said, this isn't right. Stocks are trading at these huge multiples. And they said, yeah, but this is the internet. It's different this time. How'd that work out? Then we had the housing market. And housing prices were going through the roof. People were buying two or three homes. Bartenders were owning six investment properties, and there were people pointing this out. Well, this isn't right. And people said, no, you don't understand. It's different this time. How'd that work out? And I've sat in this chair for 5 years warning everybody about inflation, but nobody cared because it was Trump signing trillion-dollar deficits. It was Trump touting hundreds of billions of dollars more for the U.S. military. It was Republicans passing these big bills. Now, suddenly, the inflation is here. It's here, and it's not going anywhere. And people have got to understand it, because if there is a crisis, we may be forced to rebuild something. It would be nice if we rebuilt the right thing this time. Kick this central planning out. So we're back to this clip. I'm sticking with it. I'm sticking with it from The Big Short, because I so associate with this speech of somebody who can look at something and just say, this isn't right. It cannot go on like this, no matter what's been happening. And remember, at this time, there was no financial crisis. The time this speech was made, it was just starting. This guy had been warning about it for quite some time and made big bets against the economy because he knew what was coming. First, we're going to go back and listen to the bull, your typical investment banker who tells you everything is great. We got this under control. Now, what could possibly go wrong?
So as some of you may know, Bear Stearns has just received a loan from J.P. Morgan. Of course, we're going to have to wait and see how the markets react, but that should lay to rest any concerns about the bank's health.
No, I take it you have no plans to sell your $200 million in Bear stock?
No, as a matter of fact, when we're done here, I'll probably go out and buy some more.
For the opposing view, Mr. Baum.
I got a stand for this. Okay, hi. My firm's thesis is pretty simple. Wall Street took a good idea
Louis Ranieri's mortgage bond and turned it into an atomic bomb of fraud and stupidity that's on its way to decimating the world economy.
How do you really feel?
I'm glad.
See, that's the bull chiming in there, just laughing. And this is what happened to the people who were calling this out and saying and warning. They were ridiculed. Peter Schiff. They laughed at him on CNBC, warning about the financial crisis coming because all the Wall Streeters. And, you know, when these people tell you, oh, yeah, I'd buy more of this stock, what they're really saying is, I want you to buy more of this stock because I've already got a bunch. And the more you buy, the more my shares appreciate. I need to get you lemmings into these stocks. But they're so roundly dismissed, these people. And maybe I'm trying to bolster myself here. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe I'm just lonely for talking about this stuff. But history stands well with the people who warn you up front.
I'm glad you still have a sense of humor. I wouldn't if I were you.
I kind of like this guy's intensity, too. I got to admit, it's serious stuff. Imagine, just think about all of the millions and millions of Americans who got really, really hurt by the financial crisis.
Now, anyone who knows me knows that I have no problem telling someone they're wrong. But for the first time, it's not so enjoyable. We live in an era of fraud in America, not just in banking, but in government, education, religion, food, even baseball.
Amen.
What bothers me isn't that fraud is not nice or that fraud is mean. It's that for 15,000 years, fraud and short-sighted thinking have never, ever worked. Not once.
Jesus.
Eventually, people get caught. Things go...
Plummeting, man. Plummeting.
When the hell did we forget all that? I thought we were better than this. I really did. And the fact that we're not doesn't make me feel all right and superior. It makes me feel sad.
Every time I...
See, this guy's speaking to me. This is an actual event that took place that was portrayed in The Big Short, the movie. It does. It makes me sad. It makes me sad to sit by and watch what this freight train that ran over people in 2008, and it has just done nothing but pick up steam since 2008.
Fresh, it's dropping, man.
It always down goes.
Down. And as fun as it is to watch pompous, dumb Wall Streeters be wildly wrong, and you are wrong, sir... I just know that at the end of the day, average people are going to be the ones that are going to have to pay for all of this. Because they always, 32? Always...
It's 32. Yeah.
And you understand right now, you are that average person and you are paying for these things that have gone on. You are paying right now at the gas pump, at the grocery store, for your clothes. All of the inflation that you're seeing right now, you know what you're paying for? You're paying for the higher asset prices, the greater wealth of those, that top 1.01%. You're paying for the value of their art. You're paying for the value of their homes. You're paying for the value of their stock portfolios. You're paying for the value of their private equity positions. Because the inflation has come to you to roost in your home. Because the Federal Reserve has been printing up money to line and feather their nests. And what he was talking about there and he saw was that when Wall Street falls, the American taxpayer is going to bail them out. And that's what we did. Over 80% of us said we didn't want to bail out Wall Street. What did our politicians do? They bailed out Wall Street in a bipartisan fashion, starting with George W. Bush and his ex-Goldman Sachs banker Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson, and then continuing on into the Obama administration, where he appointed a lawyer from Deutsche Bank to head the enforcement of the SEC. This is why we saw no perp walks. Donald Trump repeated this cycle by putting these Wall Streeters in positions of power. We had at Treasury under Donald Trump another, anyone, Goldman Sachs alumni. Republicans like Goldman Sachs, Democrats like Citigroup. That's really the difference between the two parties. And it's really almost a a distinction without much of a difference. If Citibank, if Citigroup wins, Wall Street wins, it means Goldman Sachs wins. If Goldman Sachs wins, it means Wall Street wins, it means Citigroup wins. They all win. Every extra nickel you are paying right now is money that was funneled to the elites that are now increasing the prices that you pay. And the fact we don't understand this is just criminal. I'm going to let this clip finish up.
That's my 2 cents. Thank you.
I'm going to drop a deuce at Deutsche.
Does our bull have a response?
Only that in the entire history of Wall Street, no investment bank has ever failed unless caught in criminal activities. So, yes, I stand by my Bear Stearns optimism.
Mr. Miller, I'm sorry, quick question. From the time you guys started talking, Bear Stearns stock has fallen more than 38%. Would you still buy more?
Yeah, sure. Of course I'd buy more. Why not?
Boom!
Jesus Christ.
First part of our presentation.
And then she announces Alan Greenspan's coming on next, the architect of the entire financial crisis, Alan Greenspan. They bring him on as some kind of a conquering hero. Time magazine runs stories like the man who saved the world, Ben Bernanke, Federal Reserve Chairman, Janet Yellen. They're all heralded as these masters of the universe that are protecting us all and keeping our economy going. They are setting us all up. Republicans and Democrats, blacks and whites, men and women, every one of us, they have set us up. And I'm sorry to spend so much time on that. Maybe this is a bit of, you know, occasionally I'll do a show for me. But it is these people who warn you of it. And in the case of Big Short or Beter Schiff, the people who actually put their money where their mouth is and they say, I know this cannot continue. And they warn and they warn and they warn and they're ridiculed and they're silenced and they're sidelined. And then it happens. And right now, as I say, I've been talking for 5 years about this inflation. Now you see it. Now you see it. Now you see it. And now people can't diagnose it. They're going to blame Joe Biden alone. You're going to put up those cute little stickers. I did that at the price of a pump. We still can't diagnose this stuff. This is why it's frustrating to me, and it makes me just keep circling back. Pardon my Jen Psaki phrase, to back to this topic time and time again, because I'm bound and determined at some point, if conservatives can't figure this out with some basic level of economic understanding of small limited government and money printing, if you can't figure it out, there's really no hope for anybody else. I'll be right back. You know, one of the reasons that I cover this financial stuff when the news is about Hunter Biden or Joe Biden, I just, the political theater stuff is wildly uninteresting to me. You know, the reason I cover this stuff is because it hurts you. I mean, this is the stuff, if you understand why you're being hurt, maybe you would make some different choices. I said for 4 years when Mike Pompeo's rotund butt. He's lost a lot of weight. I'll give him that. He just needs to lose the rest of it, if you know what I mean. While he was laying sanctions on Russia, I didn't carry water for Trump because Trump loved Mike Pompeo and Mike Pompeo loved Trump. I told you this is a disaster in the making. I'm going to show you next hour when we come back exactly what I'm talking about. You don't understand. These people want to hurt the little people. They just do not care. George Carlin said it. They don't care. They do not care about you. They do not care. They do not care about you. There's a headline right now. The European Union is seeking a ban now on Russian coal. These are the same people, a lot of the green weenies over in Europe that have been dismantling their energy system over there. And you are going to see huge shortages in Europe. And we're seeing them here, too. There's another headline here about New York jet fuel soars to record high as inventories plunge. This is going to be in your airline tickets. I'm probably not talking to the private jet crowd. But they will allow, I mean, in Europe or here, they don't care about your energy. They don't care about your comfort. They don't care about your warmth in the winter or your cool in the summer. They will do whatever it takes. And I'm going to show you, too, that they want this war. And this war was purposeful. This was not an accident. This was not the unhinged Vladimir Putin just acting unexpectedly. You know, and I'll prove it. I'll prove it to you next hour. But these things hurt you. Now people feel them. They've been hurting you for decades and decades. But, you know, we had our Netflix and inflation was only, I don't know, 5 or 6%. They told you it was 1.5%. But we all know it was 5, 6, 7%. Now it's 15% or better. And everybody's just been kind of okay with it. Like I said, you know, the slow rise of the temperature when you boil a frog. Well, now they've turned up the heat. And it's coming. And if people do not understand what is happening to them, then we will just continue to repeat this cycle, repeat, repeat, repeat. And I'm going to at least go out having tried to explain what's going on. Be right back. Right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. I am constantly reminded of what a contrarian I am, what a troublemaker I am. News reported during the break that they have determined scientifically through some group in Sweden, I'm sure they used taxpayer money to study this, but they found that vanilla was the most popular, by far, smell to all humans everywhere. Come on, it's cinnamon. Am I wrong here? Cinnamon blows vanilla away. Now, I like vanilla. I have been in relationships where the feminine of the relationship did enjoy a vanilla candle. I can like that, but it's cinnamon. It's cinnamon. Anyway, I'm just reminded constantly of how I just don't fit into society at large. I can't get on board with the same chair the rest of the hosts do. Actually, this morning, Clay Edwards said he likes the chair that I like better than the one that all the other hosts like better. So maybe Clay's coming over to my side. He may be tiptoeing into libertarianism. Maybe I can somehow get him to move that way as well. The latest headline I wanted to talk about, and as I kind of flesh out some of this financial stuff to explain to you what's going on, is that they are using the Russian situation to hurt everybody, to bring you to a level of pain that will get you just desperate enough to accept their solution. And yesterday, I believe, I discussed at great length what their solution may be is an entire remaking of the world's financial system based around central bank digital currencies in the United States and elsewhere. Total tracking, tracing, surveillance of your money. You will be unable to do anything outside of the watchful, careful, loving eyes of your government when it comes to your finances. This is a disaster in the making. I won't go back into that today. You can listen to the podcast from yesterday if you want to hear my condemnation of that system and all the various dangers associated with it. But now the story today is about Russian atrocities. I can't even remember Bucha, somewhere in Ukraine. There are bodies laying on the ground. I'm reminded of a video I saw and have narrated. I need a TV show, I think. I ended up with too much visual stuff, but there was a picture from somewhere in the Middle East. And it's basically, you know, closed circuit television, just like a, you know, just a camera attached to a garage or a light post or something like that. It shows these two guys doing something in the back seat of a car. And all of a sudden they jump out of the car, they run away. The car just blows up, smithereens, debris everywhere, cars in a raging fire. And then suddenly, and this was put out on LiveLeak, wouldn't know how to title it for you to go find it. And then suddenly you see come into the camera view, probably about 18 to 25 people come running in and they all lay on the ground. Then the photographers come in. The photographers took picture of this horrific car bombing and all of the victims laying on the street. The unfortunate part of it is live leak exposed, this was a completely staged scene. I'm not saying that's what's happened in Bucha, but we need to be on guard for these things. But is the Russian atrocities now that we are being treated to as far as our propaganda goes? Scott Horton, the great Scott Horton, has been on the show before. He is the head of the Libertarian Institute, and he runs antiwar.com as a website. He has the quote of the day when it comes to the Russian atrocities. Scott Horton says, if 300 dead civilians is, quote, genocide, unquote, then I'm really looking forward to Clinton, W. Bush, Obama, Trump, Biden, and all their cabinets' upcoming criminal trials. Or does it have to be exactly 300? 1,000 times more still count? I don't know if anybody ever saw the footage that was released by WikiLeaks before we decided to persecute and try to slow kill Julian Assange in a British prison. But if you ever saw the massacre of the citizens and the journalists, I believe it was in Iraq, by U.S. military helicopters. I know this is not popular to cover, but it was a particularly gruesome war crime, as the people who went in to actually rescue these innocent people who were just standing around chatting one morning when we lit them up and laughed about it. Even the rescuers, when they came in, they were also dispatched, including a child that was injured in the front seat of a van that pulled up to try to rescue some of these wounded innocent people that had been cut to shreds by our military choppers. No war crimes there. But in reaction to these Russian atrocities, we're being told, and this leads us back into the financial stuff, we are leveling anyone, more sanctions. And these are sanctions that will hurt you eventually, and maybe not that far off into the future. The sanctions are already affecting us when it comes to oil, price of gasoline. We are all paying the price for every one of these sanctions, all of the ridiculous ones the Biden administration has put on that were also set up by the ones from the Trump and the Obama administration. As Washington cast about for ways to tighten the financial screws on Russia, the Treasury late last night announced another measure to try and isolate Moscow from the international financial system. According to Reuters, the Russian state will no longer be allowed to make dollar debt payments from its accounts at U.S. banks going forward. Of course, the West has already frozen hundreds of billions of dollars worth of Russia's dollar and euro reserves held abroad. This piece goes on to say that is a decision that will likely backfire by pushing China, Russia, India, and others to diversify away from those reserve assets, as Credit Suisse's Zoltan Poznar and the IMF's Geeta Gowinarth and even Vladimir Putin himself have already warned. And what this is, I'm not going to read any more of this. We've decided to impose more sanctions as a result of these, air quotes here in the studio, atrocities created by the Russians in Bucha in Ukraine. This will further weaken the U.S. dollar going forward. They are attempting to cut Russia off from making payments on its bonds. Understand what that means. That means there are a lot of people, both in private industry and the big banks, probably some pension funds, citizens around the world, governments, have all bought Russian bonds the same way they buy American bonds or anywhere that they can get a return on their money. And I would imagine, without looking at it, that Russian bonds probably pay significantly more than the U.S. bonds pay. The U.S. is trying to cut people off from getting their interest payments from Russia to further isolate Moscow. What that can do, though, is, and I don't know the amount, it's in the billions of dollars. This is billions of dollars of interest they don't want Russia paying to its creditors. A lot of these creditors are expecting that money. And this is these are the kinds of little triggers that happen when if you've got somebody who's heavily invested in Russian bonds and the U.S. steps in and says, you can't collect the interest that runs your business or whatever it is. You can't collect that because we are isolating Russia, and then this little financial institution may fail because they depended on the income that they get from Russian bonds. And this little institution may fail, and it may cause a bigger institution to fail because it was heavily invested in the smaller institution, if you understand what I'm saying. These are the kinds of little things that will help de-dollarize the world and can cause financial crises. Now, Russia so far has really been able to kind of get around all of this stuff. they've been anticipating it for a while. I don't know if we've done anything that's really surprised the Russian government as far as our sanctions. God knows they must be getting used to them. We've been doing it for 10 years now. Ridiculous, endless sanctions. Obama, Trump, and Biden. I'm sure they expected just about anything. And so far, they are still paying their creditors. But we are trying to force, Russia to default. We are trying to force Russia into a currency crisis. This would have, of course, disastrous effects on the Russian citizens who have absolutely nothing to do with this war. They're sitting there minding their own business, planning for a birthday party, trying to get to work and soccer practice like the rest of us. But the psychopaths in Washington, D.C. want to force Russia into a default situation. These are the kinds of things that precipitate financial crises because everything is so intertwined. Everything is so interconnected. This is what happens when big firms fail and suddenly they default on stuff and they owe a bunch of other companies a lot of money. Well, those companies who are owed a lot of money, that are counting on getting money from these firms, suddenly they can't pay their bills and it just goes up, 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 up. Financial dominoes. The U.S. is trying to cause a financial crisis in Russia, but there is no accounting for the fact that it will stay isolated to Russia. I just warn you about this. It is this sanctions regime, these acts of war that are just called sanctions like they're normal. They're not. They're acts of war. They were acts of war under Barack Obama. They were acts of war under Donald Trump. And they are acts of war under President Biden. These sanctions are further leading us towards a financial crisis. And I've talked about it. I guess I'll take a break real quick. I told you they want this war with Russia. You know, it's very interesting to me. Russia gave 10 years of red line warnings. Oh, you've heard Obama give his red lines and Trump give his red lines and Biden red lines and Clinton red lines and George W. Bush. You've heard this saying before. We will not stand for this. With Syria, the red line was the use of chemical weapons. And then just strangely enough, right at the right time, right before we withdrew our troops, supposedly Syria used these weapons that crossed the red line. And what did we do? Well, we immediately acted, right? Trump launched, what was it, 200 Tomahawk missiles into Syria, like the day after they said that they used chemical attacks, or within a week or something like that, and recommitted U.S. forces. We always have these red lines. We won't put up with this. We won't put up with that. You cross this red line, you can anticipate action. Vladimir Putin has been giving red line warnings for 10 years. No more offensive weapons into Ukraine. No NATO membership for Ukraine. To put NATO on our border. 10 years, Russia has been saying, hey, this is our red line. I'm going to show you when we come back that they knew that that was a red line. And the duplicitous nature of this story about what Zelensky was saying publicly versus what they were saying privately is just, it is the handmaiden, the handiwork of psychopaths. This whole thing could have been avoided. All of it. The tragedy that is befalling the Ukrainian citizens and all of the things that are happening to us right now. Things like gas prices, increased military spending, all of these things could have been absolutely avoided at any time during the past 10 years, really any time during the last 30 years. We could have decided, hey, Russia decided to ditch its communist ways. Let's buddy up with them. We're pretty similar to them culturally. But we didn't. But during the last 10 years, at any point, they could have diffused this entire situation. They didn't want to. And I'll show you what I mean when I come back. Stay with me. I went home with a waitress the way I always do. How was I? I turned on the local ABC News affiliate here to just watch weather. I'm fascinated by weather. I was watching it, but God help me, I just looked up and realized that the view is on my television screen here in the studio. At least this confirms. I thought I competed against them. It's hard for me to stomach the fact that there are people who would rather watch The View than listen to this show. It's hard for me to stomach that people would rather watch The View than do anything else. I'm looking at this thing. really quite. They can't hold me to ratings, can they? I mean, if I'm watching this, this is just an over-the-air antenna. They can't catch that as a view, can they? I don't want to be contributing to the view's ratings. I'll turn this off right now. Actually, I will turn it off in just a second. Next break, I'll get around the monitor here and turn it off. This audience is completely masked up and separated. It is just, it's hard to watch. Absolutely hard to watch. And Whoopi Goldberg, I haven't seen her in a while. I guess she's back. Wasn't she suspended for a little while for some insensitive, maybe anti-Semitic comments? She's back and round as ever. I mean, she is almost completely round. From the top, it's just her legs. It's kind of like it looks a little bit like the Kool-Aid character that busts through the walls. She's like black Kool-Aid, completely round. I'd never noticed that before. Back to this stuff with Russia. I'm just going to show you that they want this war. Zelensky, the president that everybody's cheering for, the hero. I guess he was at the Grammys. People are making body pillows with this guy. This guy is causing the suffering in Ukraine. And he's doing it at the behest of Western powers, most specifically the Biden administration and the U.S. government, also the Roger Wickers of the world. So just I want to be so painfully clear every time I bring those kinds of things up. This is not a partisan issue. You've got your Lindsey Grahams, your Marco Rubios. For every Joe Biden and every nut job Democrat out there with their Russia hysteria, you've got a counterpart in a Lindsey Graham or a Roger Wicker saying we need to be tougher on Russia. The Republicans' complaint is that we're not being tough enough on Russia. Republicans, I don't think we'll be happy until the first nuke falls as far as hostilities with Russia go. But I want you to listen to two little stories here. One is Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky rejected a proposal from German Chancellor Olaf Scholz just days before the Russian invasion. The February 19th offer called on Kiev to renounce its NATO aspirations and declare neutrality. As I've said since this started, that was all it took. It could have been signed in an afternoon. I've said this repeatedly. In an afternoon, they could have stopped this or they could have ended it. They could end it right now. In the next 30 minutes, they could end the hostilities in Ukraine. Zelensky, the U.S., they don't want to. They want this war. And I'm going to show you, it gets even grosser in just a second. At the time, Zelensky received the security plan saying Russian President Vladimir Putin could not be trusted to uphold the agreement. Under Berlin's plan, Putin and American President Joe Biden would sign the deal and jointly guarantee Ukraine's security. Wall Street Journal, which initially reported the proposal, said that Zelensky rejected the offer and it, quote, left German officials worried that the chances of peace were fading. That's because peace was never the goal for the other Western countries, particularly the United States. The day after the meeting, French President Emmanuel Macron appealed to Biden in a call between world leaders to make another push for democracy. Mr. Macron spent the night of February 20th alternately on the phone with Putin and Biden. A Frenchman was still talking with Putin at 3 a.m. Moscow time, negotiating the wording of a press release announcing the plan for a U.S.-Russia summit. But the next day, Mr. Putin called Mr. Macron back. The summit was off. Putin said he has decided to recognize the independence of separatist enclaves in eastern Ukraine. He said fascists had seized power in Kiev while NATO hadn't responded to his security concerns, ding, 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 and was planning to deploy nuclear missiles in Ukraine. 10 years, he said, no NATO, no offensive weapons in Ukraine. Germans were even trying to broker a peace deal, but Zelensky doesn't do anything the U.S. doesn't tell him to do. We put him in power. We're keeping him in power. Hell, we're making him a damn celebrity. He doesn't do anything without the U.S. And the U.S. told him, no, walk away from this. Don't sign that. You can't trust Putin. This whole thing could have been avoided. If that's not bad enough, I want you to listen to this. It is translated. This is I don't see what network this is on. The Chiron just says Ukraine's president on joining NATO. And it is translated. I want you to listen to what he says. This is gross.
And I requested that personally. I requested them personally to say directly that we are going to accept you into NATO or NATO in a year or two or five. Just say it directly and clearly, or just say no. And the response was very clear. You're not going to be a NATO or EU member, but publicly, the doors will remain open.
Okay, do you understand what they just said? This is what Zelensky just said. He said, I just asked for them to come out publicly and say, we will be in NATO in 1 or 5 years, or just say, no, we're not going to be a NATO power. And what NATO told him was, you know, you're not going to be a NATO power, but we need to make it look like you might. In private, they were telling him, no, you're not going to be part of NATO, which would have assuaged Putin, which would have called this whole thing off had they just gone public and said, oh, no, Ukraine's not going to be a member of NATO. But instead they said, but we want to keep that threat out there. They acknowledge in private that Ukraine was not going to join NATO, but they want to keep pestering Putin and making him paranoid about it. You understand how sick that is? It's like a neighbor threatening another neighbor constantly, looking at him menacingly, maybe setting up some weapons in the front yard that are pointed right at the neighbor's house, doing the old first and second finger, you point at your eyes and then you point at them, watching you. Maybe when the neighbor comes home, you do the slit throat gesture. You steal their mail. I'm trying to think of what would be like sanctions. You know, maybe you steal their mail, or you won't let the post office deliver mail to them so they can't get their check, or they can't. You're constantly isolating this one neighbor. You're always bugging them. You're always threatening them. You're always menacing them. But then you go inside the house and your wife goes, well, are you ever going to go after this neighbor? And you go, no, I don't have any intention of doing that. I'm just messing with him. And then when that neighbor finally has enough of you pointing weapons at him and making threatening gestures and cutting him off from the rest of the neighborhood, when he finally acts out, you go, oh my God, look how aggressive that guy's being. So in private, even NATO was telling Ukraine, no, you're not coming into NATO, but we don't want Putin to know that. We want to keep him nervous. We want to keep the threat level to Russia at maximum level. See, they wanted this war. They wanted it. There was every opportunity between just those two stories. The Germans put together a deal. Could have been signed in an afternoon. The U.S. told Zelensky to say no. So Zelensky said no. They could have ended this by NATO just coming out and saying, there's no way Ukraine's going to be in NATO. That's just a powder keg we don't need to do. We don't need to agitate Russia. A lot of the people in Ukraine are ethnic Russians. We're just going to leave that alone. They could have said that publicly, but they didn't. They wanted to dangle out that threat to Vladimir Putin. They want this war. That's why it's still going on. That's why it started in the first place. These are psychopaths in charge of this deal. This is really crazy stuff. Now, just to let you give you a warm, fuzzy feeling about here in the United States, though, I did see a very pretty video this morning of the FBI. The FBI has jumped into action. Had a very well-produced video. I think there might have been a drone involved to get some of the action pictures of, you know, the Navy FBI windbreakers. Oh, you've seen them all over TV with the endless propaganda. Have you ever noticed how many shows? NCIS. It's all the federal government heroes out there keeping us safe against terrorism. I mean, I don't watch network television. I don't think I watch anything on network television, and haven't for years. But I do see the ads during sports, and it's NCIS, FBI this, FBI that, DEA this, or they got different federal agencies in different cities always saving the day. I mean, the propaganda, I can imagine the Russians were watching the same kind of stuff in the 1980s, just the production value wasn't as good. But there's a great video today of the FBI boarding the ship of a Russian oligarch. That'll do it. Oh, yes, we've stolen a ship from somebody. No due process. We haven't prosecuted. We haven't accused them of a crime. We haven't gone through any kind of a court proceeding. It's just that this guy is supposedly friends with Vladimir Putin. So the Department of, air quotes here in the studio, justice, with no due process, no charges, not even the threat of any charges, not even accusations. We just decide to go in and take his ship. This is thug mafia behavior. That is the U.S. federal government. I'll be right back. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I crack myself up. I'm so lonely in the political battlefields that is talk radio, I got to tell you. So some neocon comes in during that break just then. Probably bad form to challenge. These are national organizations. They don't really have anything to do with us. And I think the station owner here knows that I'm kind of a fly in the ointment anyway. The guy comes on and starts questioning how we've got to get Russia off this UN Human Rights Council. Because they're an authoritarian regime. We got to kick them off the Human Rights Council. This is a guy who I guess supports our involvement on the Human Rights Council. We have the largest prison population on planet Earth. Chinese might beat us once you got to the honest numbers, but that's a pretty low bar to say maybe China's worse than us. We've got a huge prison population here in the United States. We lock up more of our fellow citizens than any other country, any Western country for sure. We are currently, right now, as we speak, if you can be quiet for a second, you might hear drone strikes or bombs dropping on the poorest country in the Middle East, Yemen, and the United States is providing logistical support, air refueling, and bombs to bomb Yemen into a genocide. Right now, that's the U.S. doing it. We have invaded Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Somalia, Syria. We assassinate leaders who don't go along with things that the World Bank wants, but it's okay that we're on the Human Rights Commission of the UN, right? I mean, we are this bastion of democracy. When we drop a bomb, flowers grow. When the Russians do anything, it's bodies in the streets, it's carnage. But when we do it, it's like fertilizer. We're just dropping fertilizer around the world to help the plants grow, I guess. Pay no attention to the 300,000 people dead in Yemen right now under U.S. munitions that we provide to the Saudi Arabians, those bastions of human rights. Unbelievable stuff. I mean, look, either the rest of the world's insane and I'm the last sane standing man, or I'm insane and I'm willing to acknowledge either. I'm wildly open to either. Or it's the Matrix. And this is all just a big joke on me. I am going to switch topics a little bit here. It's Tuesday. I do not have a Tech Tuesday segment per se, but I am going to play a couple of clips here just to say I love the internet. That's technology, isn't it? I love the internet. Now, it's used for all kinds of things that are damaging to society. There's all kinds of time wasters on it, and social media, I think, is a disaster. But I love the internet. You know, there was a time when policymakers, people could just say things, and then it was just gone. Poof. You know, I mean, the mainstream media wasn't going to cover anything if somebody was just absolutely 110% wrong. They would certainly try to memory hole it themselves, but you can't beat the internet. It lives on the internet for forever. There are podcasts out there right now of me saying, Russia's not going to invade Ukraine. You can go listen to them. I was dead wrong. Don't mind admitting it. But I love the internet and the fact that we can pull these things up. I got two just delicious clips from the internet that I want to share. The first one is from the CDC. We're going to talk a little bit about COVID here. It's still a thing. And we cannot let these people slither away back under their rock without holding them accountable. And then I'm going to also talk in just a second. I'm going to tell you, I made a prediction long ago that has come true, but it was the easiest one ever. It's really not anything for me to crow about. It's just I have finally verified that it's true. Anyway, this is CDC Director Rochelle Walensky. This is starting to make the rounds again on the internets.
Our data from the CDC today suggest, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick, and that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real world data.
How about that? Wow, was she wrong? Was she incredibly wrong? I haven't heard the apology. I'll be searching tonight for the apology video for everything that she got wrong. I love the internet. These words do come back to haunt them at some point. But the CDC is doing a revamp. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director, And I always want us to just pause on the title of this agency, knowing what we've been through over the last 2 years. They are the Centers for Disease Control and for Prevention. Just a smash-up job last 2 years, living up to their name, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Anyway, their director, Rochelle Walensky, announced plans Monday to revamp the agency that has come under blistering criticism for its performance leading the U.S. response to the coronavirus pandemic. Now, let me just pause here for a second to say, I'll tell you who is not blisteringly critical of the CDC, and that is the big pharma that owns the CDC. They've done quite well. The CDC has done everything according to plan, perfectly, for big pharma, not so much for the citizens of the United States, not so much for people, but for profits and for big pharma. The CDC has performed exactly as it is designed to perform. Anyway, Walensky says they're going to redo it. Quote, it is time to step back and strategically position the CDC to support the future of public health. Over the past year, I have heard from many of you that you would like to see CDC build on its rich history and modernize for the world around us. This is what she wrote in her email. Quote, I am grateful for your efforts to lean into the hard work of transforming CDC for the better. I look forward to our collective efforts to position the CDC and the public health community for the greatest success in the future. Walensky said the revamp would focus on the agency's, quote, core capabilities. I would love to see a list of what their core capabilities are outside of selling vaccines. I saw no capability. But the only thing at their core is corruption. But they're going to focus on what they call their core capabilities, including beefing up the nation's public health workforce. That sounds expensive. Data modernization or data modernization. That also sounds costly. Laboratory capacity, health equity, rapid response to disease outbreaks, and preparedness within the United States and around the world. Translation, we're getting some more money. And this is the Mike Madison prediction that I made. Again, it was not a very good one. I'll admit it's an easy one. The more a government agency fails, the more richly it is rewarded. The worse education gets, the more money they get per student. We've all noticed this, right? It is the same across the board. If the Securities and Exchange Commission fails to notice anything going on prior to the great financial crisis, when they refuse to prosecute even a single person responsible for crimes that cost millions and millions of people their homes, livelihoods, and in many cases their lives, no one is held accountable. And they respond to that not by firing directors, not by actually revamping an agency, but by giving it more money, because the reason that they fail every single time is always what? Anyone? Lack of money. I actually went and kind of quantified this. In 2022, these are the budget proposals from the Biden administration. 2022, as they were getting ready for fiscal year 2022, they said, today, the Biden administration released the president's fiscal year 2022 budget. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention budget request for FY 2022 is the largest budget authority increase for CDC in nearly two decades, which will enable the agency to invest in the core infrastructure of our country's public health system. So for fiscal year 2022, the Biden administration gave the CDC the largest budget authority increase in two decades. Fast forward to 2023. Here is the latest budget proposal from the Biden administration. Today, the Biden administration released the president's fiscal year 2023 budget. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention budget request for FY 2023 includes $10.65 billion in discretionary budget authority. The new CDC budget includes new proposed mandatory funding to establish a vaccines for adults program and to invest in pandemic preparedness. This budget request will enable the agency to invest in the core infrastructure of our country's public health system. Yep, so they're getting more money each year with each budget, larger budgets for the CDC because they failed so spectacularly, and what government does is reward failure. Now, I wanted to focus in on one thing that that Walensky said and then follow that up with a clip to make a point. I think these things go together quite nicely with a clip that's gone pretty viral in the past few days. And Walensky talking about revamping the CDC and I guess trying to make excuses for why they did such an abysmal job. I mean, their record is horrific. The worst in the world. Do you understand that? The United States, with all of our doctors with their white lab coats and their stethoscopes who tell you we've got the greatest medical system the world has ever known. They had the worst results to COVID, according to their numbers, of anybody in the world. In order to say, to explain this to you, this is what Rochelle Walensky said. She said, quote, "Never in its 75-year history has CDC had to make decisions so quickly based on often limited, real-time, and evolving science. As we've challenged our state and local partners, we know that now is the time for CDC to integrate the lessons learned into a strategy for the future." The money part of this statement, as she says, "Never in its 75-year history has CDC had to make decisions so quickly based on often limited, real-time, and, of course, evolving science." Now, this is a clip that's been going viral of Anthony Fauci, currently residing in the Where Is He Now file. He'll be back, don't worry. And this is a clip that's making the rounds. See if they put a date on this. He was on C-SPAN years and years ago. He's a much younger Anthony Fauci, his evil just starting to really mature. And this is what he said when somebody asked him, if you've had the flu, should you get a flu shot?
But she's had the flu for 14 days. Should she get a flu shot?
Well, no. If she got the flu for 14 days, she's as protected as anybody can be, because the best vaccination is to get infected yourself.
Wait, what?
And so she should not get it?
If she really has the flu, she definitely doesn't need a flu vaccine.
Wait, what?
If she really has the flu.
She should not get it again?
No, she doesn't need it, because it's the most potent vaccination is getting infected yourself.
And see, this is a point that I've been making quite often. If you sat down with a doctor in 2019 and you ask him, would a cloth mask or a neck gaiter from Dick's Sporting Goods stop viral transmission of a respiratory disease? A doctor would have gone, oh my gosh, no. Haven't you noticed we don't wear masks around the hospital, even during flu season? They're absolutely useless against aerosolized viral transmission of a respiratory diseases. Don't be silly. That's what a doctor would have said in 2019. You ask him again in the fall of 2020 and they go, yes, you got to wear a mask. The science is evolving. No, it's not. Same thing with natural immunity. See, the CDC wants you to believe that they just had so much trouble because they had trouble keeping up with the evolving science. No, science is always the same. Anthony Fauci's actually right in this clip. If you've got natural immunity, you're done. You're good. No need for any kind of chemical intervention. God knows, no reason to participate in a genetic therapy experiment. And so this idea that the science was evolving is just absolute horse crap. They knew masks didn't work, but they told you this time it's different. This wasn't some stealth disease that was different in its size or shape, that responded well to masks this time around, even though every other viral transmission of every other aerosolized respiratory virus would just scoot right through a mask. Anthony Fauci also told you at the beginning of it that masks don't work. But they try to tell you now that, well, we were having to react to live, time, evolving science. No, the science never evolved. Their narratives did. The science never evolved. Science never changed. Their intentions did. Their marketing did. Their propaganda changed, but the science never changed. This is, again, why I love the internet. This is Anthony Fauci telling you, if you've had the flu, for heaven's sakes, you don't need a flu vaccine. You got the best protection ever. But when it came to COVID, what did he say? Oh, we don't know about that natural immunity. No. It's not new science to study natural immunity. These ideas, this idea that if you've been exposed to a disease and recovered from it, you can go with God. You're good to go. This has always been established. They just tried to change it. The science wasn't evolving. They were just trying to make it change. Never did work. I love the internet that this stuff can come back out. I'll be right back. All right, I've only got about a minute or so left. I'm going to finish up with some fun little tweets about the CDC and their stellar record as they attempt to revamp, drawing on their core capabilities, which are non-existent outside of just selling vaccines for Big Pharma. There's a guy named Ian Miller I ran across this morning on Twitter when I was checking out a couple of Twitter feeds to see if there's any interesting news or video out there. This guy's name is Ian Miller. I'm going to have to follow him. He put out some pretty telling tweets. He's got one. Back in January, the Surgeon General warned that the Omicron wave hadn't peaked and would lead to tough times ahead. Cases have dropped 87% since. In February, Fauci said that ending mask requirements was risky. Cases have dropped 65% since. Why does anyone listen to them? He also had this one. When Denmark lifted restriction 2 months ago, Twitter promoted expert Erik Fengding said that the Danish political leaders, quote, had completely lost their friggin' minds by releasing all the COVID mitigations. Cases there have dropped over 90% since. They are literally always wrong. And the last one here, hospitalizations in the United States have never been lower, which is odd, because mask usage in the United States has also never been lower. For the love of God, people, if you are still wearing a cloth mask, regain your dignity and your sanity and take off that ridiculous mask. That's all the time I've got today. Hope you have a good one. The sun looks like it's coming out. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.